Hello and welcome to a bonus episode of The Backstraight. You're here with Daniel Squires, and this is my co-host, Michael McKnight. How are you, Michael? Twice in 1 week.
Oh my God, we're back again. See what I'm doing there, Danny?
We are back. Yeah, actually, that's good reference to the intro for the last episode. Hopefully, a few people got the joke. Backstreet's back. All right. If not, all good, all good. So you're all good,
Yeah,
Michael?
you obviously weren't around in the 80s if you didn't get it. Look, Danny, this is a bonus episode we're dropping on the listening public. It's really, I think, two interviews that we were quite excited about and wanted to share before we get into Christmas and the Sealy and all that stuff. So I've got Matthew Lavery from North Belfast, fresh from the national cross country and his selection for the European under 23. And you have?
Yeah, I've got Neil Weir. We've sort of teased this one in a few earlier episodes, a chat about his bike ride over to Berlin and then the subsequent marathon that he ran there. So, yeah, we thought we'll keep this out of the usual sort of episodes with results and all that. We'll just make this a bonus episode, get two quality people on the podcast, other than us, of course, Michael, and yeah, get
Absolutely.
chatting to them. So.
Absolutely. Well, look, Danny, if we start with Matthew Lavery, who along with Callum Morgan from Cander, Anna Gardner from East Down, Nick Griggs, of course, and Amy Green from Finn Valley, they're all the locally based athletes who've been selected for Ireland for the Eurocross in Brussels on the 10th of December. You can also add to them a number of overseas-based Northern Irish or Ulster athletes. We've got Fionnuala Ross from Armagh, who I think is based in Scotland. The Flanagan sisters, who are based, I think, in Colorado. And then we've got English-based Seamus Robinson, who runs for City of Derry. So it's, I think, nine in total guys from this small part of the world have made the team, which is pretty impressive. So I met up with Matthew earlier today, and I think we're just going to run the interview. So I'm sitting in the cafe at the Dunkern Arts Centre with North Belfast Harrier and new Irish international runner, Matthew Lavery. Welcome, Matthew, to the Backstraight.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Matthew, we're just about a week on from the national cross country, where you made the podium with a third in the under 23s. You've gained selection for the Irish under 23 team for the Eurocross, and you helped your club to a silver medal and qualification for the European clubs cross country. Has it all sunk in yet?
Sort of, yeah. I'm getting all like the emails from like Irish Athletics getting ready to go to Brussels, and it's setting in quickly, and if we're not that far away in like 2 weeks, it'll all have been happened for Brussels. So it's been a lot, but very happy and proud of all the athletes and everyone in the club who's qualified and is going and has helped everyone throughout the course of the last few months.
Well, look, we'll start by you taking me back to the national cross country in Gowran last weekend. So talk me through your race and what you plan to do and how it worked out.
So going into it, I didn't really know how to pace it really, because it was like the under 23s and the senior men are running together. So there's athletes in there who I didn't really know who they were or where I should put myself. But with a lot of races, I just kind of go out hard and then just settle in, find people who I'm familiar with, and then just hang on and see what happens. So that's what I done, and I remember starting off, and we were told, there was a member of my club said before we started, just be sure to get out quickly. And because we had all the pressure of, we could go to Portugal or we couldn't, he was really just like, get out quickly so you don't get caught in the back. So that's what I done, and then settled in and found a few boys who I, run with, Callum Morgan, Sean McGinley, Cathal O'Reilly. So I just kind of settled in with them and hung on to them the entire race and just tried my best to keep going, even though it was one of the hardest races I've ever run.
And had you a sense during the race that you were, in with a shout of making the team or the podium?
Not at all. There was like a good few of us. There was a Callum and Sean were like a bit ahead, and then I was just a bit behind them. Then there's a good amount of boys that I was with. So, but I couldn't really differentiate who was in the senior and who was in the under 23. I just kind of tried to hang on to Callum and Sean because they had made the team the year beforehand. So I was like, if I just keep on going with them, hopefully I'll something will come out of it. But when I finished, I was like, okay, it's done, what not? And then someone was like, are you under 23? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, just go in there. And it was to the podium. So I was just standing there. And then I went over to like the barrier just to see my dad. And then Rosha Roberts is there. She runs for North. And she was like, you were third? And I was like, was it? So I really didn't have any clue up until then how well I had done individually.
It is strange when you're kind of a race within a race that it's not apparent to the athletes, you know, where exactly you are. So I suppose you just got to keep going.
Yeah.
I chatted to you a little bit on the day about the race, and obviously you're someone who excels at cross country and seems to cope pretty well with those kinds of conditions.
Yeah, it's ever since I started running like 7-8 years ago, it was always cross country, which is my thing. It's what I just felt comfortable in. I like, it's not really just a test of speed, because I'm not like the speediest person, it's more just like a endurance, get out and go and just go for as long as you can. And it was always like that since I've been 12, 13 years old, and it's kind of just continued on. I just excel in the hills and the muck and the rain and the wind. I don't know what it is. It's always just been more comfortable, even though it's not comfortable at all. I just felt more at home when I'm on like a random field in the middle of nowhere. It's always easier than on a track. But it was, the ground was all cut up, so it was so like extremely hard to get your legs going. But me and my coach, we would always have done cross country training in preparation. We would always do hill training as well, just to make sure, and then we have our strength and conditioning together. So cross country's just always been, and it's more fun and it's more exciting. So it was like, I'd be doing 5K on tracks during my track season, and 12 and a half laps of just the same loop, whereas cross country, you're up and down between trees over, I remember I had a cross country race, we had to jump over hay bales, and it's always just been more exciting and interesting to run.
Yeah, you were telling me about you and Jimmy, you know, preparing with sessions at the Valley Park.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to me a little bit about that.
So we would start cross country training maybe at the end of summer, start of September. And we would just go around the Valley Park, just doing laps, fartleks, just whatever we could. And we had been doing this for years, so the ground that we've run on is so cut up from all of us doing it. And the conditions that we're running on the Valley are always quite similar to what we were running in Kilkenny. It was all cut up and heavy and mucky. And then, you know, Belfast weather's never really the best on a good day. So we would do it in the rain or the wind or just after it snowed, so it would always just be like really rural conditions. So, but I would get up every Saturday morning and then go and do that with Jim, and he would always be there standing waiting with his flags and his cones and his mats. So it's always just been second nature.
Yeah, and I think there's something about preparing specifically for cross country in Irish conditions that maybe not everybody who was in the national kind of got that memo. There was a few really big names who seemed to really struggle with the conditions. And it shouldn't have been a surprise really to anybody.
No, because they had the same course shoes 2 years ago in Kilkenny when I was under 19, I think it was, for All-Irelands. And so I was familiar with the course, but that other field was always quite cut up and very uneven. So, but I feel like going into any cross country race, you should expect the worst, always for it to be wet and uncomfortable. And I guess it kind of sets apart, you know, people who prefer track more than people who prefer cross country more, because you can see the difference in the results. Just because last year in Rosapenna, it was quite a different course. It wasn't really mucky or uneven. It was just a golf course with like a wee mini hill, and I didn't perform the best there. I think I was 10th or something. But this year, completely different course, completely different conditions, so you can tell who can.
And the good news is Brussels will probably be heavy enough going, because you know Belgium, you know, gets a fair bit of rain as well.
Yeah, and we had a Zoom call yesterday just talking about logistics for the Europeans, and they were saying how there's races on the Saturday on the same course and then on the Sunday morning on the same course, so it should already be cut up and used already. So we'll just run and see what happens. I've got 8 years of experience behind. So
well, look, before we look forward to the Europeans, you've talked about Jimmy McGuinness. So how important, the coach-athlete relationship? Jimmy obviously was a fantastic runner himself, mm-hmm. with a lot of experience. How useful is that in terms of him mentoring you?
It's very, very useful, because I've had my moments with running where I've just felt like it's not really worth it, or it's not fun anymore. But Jim's always there. He's been coaching for a while, and he's been a runner for longer than I've been alive. So he's always just there to calm me down and just say it's fine to just take a break, and if you don't want to do it, just have a few weeks off. Or if you don't want to do this track race, you don't want to do this distance, you don't want to do whatever, he's like, that's fine, you can just train for something else and we'll just sort it out as time goes on. So he's always just there to calm me down, because there's, as I said, cross country is my forte, track isn't really my thing. I'll be doing, and like 2 years ago I think it was, or it was 2022, I was doing lots of 5Ks on track, but I was getting like the same times really. It was always between 15, 18 and 21, so it was quite frustrating, but he was always there to just calm me down and say it's okay.
Well, Matthew, where we're sitting isn't far from the North Belfast Clubhouse, just off the old Park Road. It's an iconic club, and it's been rooted, I think, in this part of the city for well over 100 years. Mm-hmm. Hopefully Seamus McCann won't correct me. So what does last week's silver medal and the chance to represent Ireland and the European clubs mean to North Belfast?
It really does mean everything to them all. I think we had a really good turnout at the race on Sunday, and everyone worked really hard together. And then there was Niall Armstrong, who was there. He wasn't running, but he was helping everyone, collect their gear and support everyone. So everyone's just really happy and proud. I think it was our best placement in over 100 years or something like that. And as soon as the race had finished, we were already looking at flights and hotels, and people who weren't even running are going over to watch and support. So it really does mean everything to not only the people who were running, but to everyone else in the club as well.
Yeah, it must give everybody an enormous boost. I mean, as somebody who's involved with Annandale Striders, I am terribly envious, because we would love to achieve something like that. And maybe, it takes North Belfast to get there to reset the bar for the northern clubs.
Yeah, definitely. And it was, I feel like a lot of the winners and all of the last few years have been more southern clubs, so for a north club to come down and get second but on count back, so it was, I think we both had 72 points, us and Kilkenny. It's really impressive. We've all just been working hard this season,
and it's also it's a young team.
Yeah, it is. I'm 20, Andrew's still young, Finn's young, Connell's young, so we're all extremely excited. And then Connell has Valencia Marathon as well, so it's another trip he's going on, so we're all just really proud of each other, and we're all just like soaking it up at the minute. So
Portugal is, I guess, what, 3-4 months away?
Yeah.
So you have some other important stuff in the meantime, and let's just turn to that. So the Euro Cross Country, it's in Brussels in just over about 10-11 days' time. So what are your feelings and emotions looking ahead to it?
I was absolutely buzzing to get on the team, because I tried to get on it last year and then the year before that, and with the way I was, and I just didn't have the training, and then I was sick as well. So I think I finished 15th 2 years ago and then 10th last year. And last year really was... It bugged me. I was really upset to not get on it. So for this year to finally be able to get on the Irish team and get the Irish vest and the kit, and just for the experience of going over, it makes me really happy. All my training's been paying off, so I can't really complain. And then, so we leave on the Thursday, and we come back on the Monday. So I'm just super excited to just get out there and run, just have fun and enjoy the moment.
And you'll know some of the guys on the team, obviously.
Yeah. So me and Callum know each other. We went to school together. And then there's Dean and Abdel. We've run together for years. We've done the schools cross-countries together. And Michael Morgan as well. We ran together a few years ago, and then the only one I didn't know was Oisin, but we were talking after we finished the All-Irelands. So he's a nice guy as well. He sent me a few messages after just saying well done. So I'm very excited to just get out there with everyone and just enjoy.
And you're part of, as you mentioned, what looks like on paper a very strong Irish team.
Definitely, yeah. Just where everyone else, everyone's just has such great training. Like Abdel and Dean and Michael are away in the States running, so they're all really good. I think it was fifth year schools cross country just before COVID hit. It was Abdel was first, I was second, and Dean was third. So everyone's just next level, and then Callum's amazing and Oisin's amazing as well.
And I guess this team could be together for another couple of years, so potentially, you know, can go even better. And I don't think you'll be that far away from the medals this time. Hopefully. It's always hard to predict.
I know, it's hard to predict, and you know, it's hard to say where you'll place, but I think the team definitely has a chance of getting a medal. It is a really strong team, and everyone I've talked to who has, you know, mentioned the team has said it's a pretty impressive team. So, and everyone's just amazing in their own right.
So from your perspective, you may have discussed this with Jimmy already, what would success in this race look like? Have you any sense of that?
I'm not sure if I have any sense of that, because like, I think Callum's ran it before, and you know, they've all ran with the Irish team more than I have. I'm just happy to go out there and enjoy, but I feel like just once I run the race and finish race, knowing that I couldn't have ran any harder, that was what success to me looks like. Just keeping up with, I was running quite close with Callum at Kilkenny, so just to hold on to him for as long as I can and just do what I can, just knowing that I've ran as hard as, you know, I possibly can, that would be success for me. And then Jim is, I think he's pretty much the same. I was talking to him about it this morning, and he was just like, there's no pressure on your back, you've done all the hard work behind, you've got everything behind you, all that you need, and you have years of experience and cross-country running, so all you need to do is just get out there and do what you normally do and just leave it out there.
That sounds like a plan. You were just mentioning there, you know, that you were dealing with the disappointment of the last couple of years of not making teams, so you obviously have resilience, which is a very important quality as a runner. What do you see, it's a hard one, what do you see as your best attribute as an athlete?
My best attribute, I'd say, would just, I'd say when I get into running, I am quite strong-minded. I would say that when I'm in a race, I do really try my best to leave it all out there. When I'm training, I would try my best to just be consistent. And I say I'm quite consistent once I get into my running. I try my best to just have my 6 days a week, my three sessions, my long run, my just other runs in between, and then my strength and conditioning. But I do say whenever I'm in a race or in training, I'm very strong-minded. I try my best to just leave it all out there and, you know, finish knowing that I couldn't have ran any better.
Well, that's a pretty good quality to have for any middle-distance runner. Well, look, Matthew, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me. And on behalf of Danny and I in the back straight, can we just wish you every success for your European adventure?
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Well, look, what a great chat that was with Matthew. Thanks for coming on the pod. And we wish Matthew, as well as all of the other Northern Irish and Irish athletes, the best of luck in the upcoming races internationally. Now it's time to feature the second interview of this bonus episode. Michael and I were lucky enough to get chatting to Neil Weir about his recent epic adventure from Belfast to Berlin, where he rode his bicycle and then he ended up running a 2:43 marathon. So yeah, we spoke to him a bit about that, as well as a few other crazy endurance feats that Neil's been a part of. So we hope you enjoy this second interview, and we'll catch everyone next week. Cheers. Welcome, Neil Weir, to this bonus episode of The Back Straight. How's the form, Neil? You're coming off Dublin Marathon only a few weeks ago. Have you recovered?
Yeah, no, I actually feel pretty good after Dublin. So, yeah, I've had a few good sessions with the guys. So, yeah, looking forward now to the Sealy Cup on Saturday. So, Kind of feel the first time going into the Sealy, actually not coming off the back of some major event that's left me kind of compromised for the actual event. So now I'm looking forward to it and see how it pans out in the day. The one thing about having ran many 10Ks is the first thing you have to remember is it's 10K. And, you know, 10K is still a long way. And keep it sensible over those first 5 kilometers and don't overstretch yourself. And coming up that hill into the park the third time is always a challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you feel like this could be a PB year in the Sealy coming off a marathon block?
I don't know about a PB. I'd like to get under 33 minutes again. So I'd like to run 32 something. But yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it pans out in the day. And hopefully, you know, there'll be a good volume of runners around that sort of mark as well, which it always seems to get at the Sealy. You get a good volume of guys running at a pace and girls as well. So yeah, it should be a good race.
Yeah, it always attracts a good field. Look, we've obviously, in the space of a couple of minutes there, we've touched on your great range of distances that you can cover. But I think I'd actually like to ask, how did you get started in running?
I would always run. I started off really, actually went to university, started rowing, always played sports, played rugby then. But I always would have entered a race. I always would have entered a 10K and then a half marathon every year. And the objective was really to finish. And then the objective came, let's see how many of the, what I call the vests, I could beat. And I was doing a lot of cycling as well. I was only really mid-30s then. I joined Willowfield through a friend's father-in-law. He always kept telling me, Neil, if you'd have joined us, we could have done well in the team event there. So I joined Willowfield, and then running became more serious and focused more on that, you know. But again, it's like one of the things, you have to look back at the journey to really appreciate it, because now you go out and, you know, you can run a marathon in 2.5 odd hours and you think, well, it's a bit blasé now. But if you look back to around first marathon in 2006, probably didn't do much training, and it was 3 hours 33. And if somebody had said, well, you know, fast forward a number of years, you know, you'd be taking over an hour off that, you wouldn't believe it. But again, it's just consistent training through the years that really builds that big that cardio base and allows you to do these things. But I think for any athlete, it is important to look back to where they started from, and that first time, if you're new to it, just leaving the door, and you know, how far you can come in a reasonably short period of time.
It's, I guess, quite common that people base where they're at and sort of always think about the last result that they had compared to maybe 3 or 4 years ago. So yeah, that's quite
this
wise.
This maybe comes from perspective when you haven't run a PB in a few years and you start to reflect a wee bit more rather than, you know, looking at your last race. But I think as well, you sometimes go into a race and you'll consider it more of a race that you're putting all your eggs to do well, and you'll prepare better for it. You'll train specifically for it, but then there's other races that are just part of your normal season, and you'll run them, either run them to help your club out, or you'll run them just as a training exercise. But, you know, I always say, if you are putting a number on, it's always a race. And don't give me any of this nonsense, I'm just here as a tempo run and all this stuff. It never really works out like that once you get shoulder to shoulder with somebody out there.
Yeah, definitely not. Luckily as well, it doesn't seem like you have to look too far in the past to find your marathon PB. Am I correct in saying you ran 2:32 odd in Manchester this year?
No, Manchester was 2:34. It was Berlin. Berlin was 2:32. Yeah, the funny thing about Manchester was it was probably in PB shape, but it was the ambition to try and do 2:29 that blew the wheels off in the second half. So we'll keep knocking on the door, but yeah, we'll see. See, it takes a sort of focused singular goal just to really prep and plan to run a marathon at that pace. So yeah, maybe next year, but we'll keep trying anyway.
And what's your passion regarding endurance sports? Is it marathoning and running, or, you know, obviously you're quite an avid cyclist, which one do you like better, or you can't pick between the two?
I did do a bit of racing on the bike for a while. I enjoyed it to a certain extent, but I then decided that the mantra was competitive racing at running and leisure cycling. So I would do enjoy, you know, going away, and the cycling's more for the scenery and getting out and the same parts of the world you're never going to see. And as well, you know, it gets me out in the mountains as well, where I quite like to be. So it fulfills a couple of objectives there, travel and obviously the fitness aspect of it as well. And you know, you can plan all sorts of adventures on a bicycle obviously the range is a lot greater than you can when you're running. So the challenges are a bit different. It's a bit different physiology as well, but I think it crosses over quite well into running and endurance, running particularly. I think it's definitely, you know, because you can only run so many miles, and you can only run to a certain intensity for a certain period of time, but the load in the body is a lot less than the bike, so obviously you go further and you go harder for longer. So it does cross over quite well for running and the cardio aspect of it.
Mm. I'm interested to hear that you you do actually consider load on your body, because by the looks of things, I've been reading your blog, you've done a number of trips where you've cycled from somewhere to the start line of a race, and then you've decided to run 40 odd or 50 kilometers in a race. I mean, that's that maybe goes against a little bit what you're saying about the load.
Yeah, it depends on how you take it. I mean, that the cycle, for example, if we take the cycle to Berlin, that really started off as a cycle to Berlin, and I hadn't actually even considered running a marathon. And once you kind of get into your head, well, what does cycling to Berlin look like on paper? How am I going to do it? What's the logistics look like? What does the mileage look like? Then you can sort of plan that. And a lot of it's mindset. You've got that dialed into your brain, how that's going to happen. And then you plan the route. So it was all managing the load throughout that journey, because I knew I had a marathon to run. I wouldn't say I was pedaling every day, and it was long days, but I was trying to manage the load on the body as well to make sure, like, I wasn't racing. You know, it wasn't a race, it was a journey, and I had to get to Berlin at a certain time and hopefully in a reasonable condition. So again, there was management throughout that to make sure that I was capable of running by the time I got off the bike. At this time, I had no idea how it was going to go. It was just, it's one of them things, like every year, just to do something that challenges, takes you out of your comfort zone. Something that you may even consider that, you know, I may not be able to do this year. But that's good. That's a good thing. To face up to that and put into preparation. And then it's the snowball effect, because once you've done that, then you start thinking, well, you'll be able to do that there. It's quite good now. What else is out there, you know, that you can kind of plan and think about? So it is, you do mind as you know, running wise as well. I would always try, if I am running, like, I'd never run hard 2 days in a row, but run hard and then, you know, 8 and 9 minute miles the rest of the time, because, you know, the body has to recover and you have to let it recover. It's important not to let your ego run away with you every day.
Neil, there was a very personal angle to this decision to go to Berlin, and can you tell us a wee bit about that if you want to?
I was doing it as well to raise money for the Alzheimer's Society. My father, he had Alzheimer's, and he passed away in 2020. So me and my sister have done a few things in the past. We ran the Belfast Half Marathon, raised money. When I decided to do this here, I thought it'd be a good opportunity as well to raise a bit of awareness and some funds as well for a very good cause. And anybody that's experienced that and somebody within their close circle, you know, it is a hell of an endurance test that the person goes through as well. So this was just a small my way of raising money and kind of putting it into that sort of context. Although knowing my dad, if I'd have told him I was doing this here, he only had two words with me, which would be "you bloody fool." So but yeah, no, it was good, and it did give an extra bit of impetus to myself when I was doing it, and obviously, you know, along the journey as well, because it was a solo journey, and there's part of the reasons I wanted it to be solo, because if you're in a group or even with two people, I've tried this before, it's very difficult over 800 miles to keep two people together on a bicycle. So, so that was part of the reason for that. But yeah, I know it was a worthwhile cause, and I was actually really appreciative every day of the support that came through, and it was great and really helped me actually throughout the journey. And felt like I was doing it more just for selfish reasons to push myself and see what I could achieve. It was kind of a bit bigger than that.
Yeah, it struck me there's something about these kind of challenges as the celebration of being alive, because eventually all of us one day will be old and infirm. And it's about maybe, when you can take these opportunities to climb mountains, to cycle across continents, to run marathons.
Yeah, that's it as well. And I think one of some of the greatest things out there is not to actually let even age be a barrier to doing any of these things, and keep going at whatever level you can go, because it keeps the mind active, keeps the body moving, and that's the most important things you can hope for in life at the end of the
Yeah,
day. So
absolutely.
you just have to, and if there's a challenge out there, and even if you feel it's a stretch, you're never going to know until you actually try. So put the wheels in motion, put a plan together, and then once you've the plan together, it's really just a matter of executing them.
The bit, Neil, that like Danny, I was reading your blog today, and the bit that I laughed and almost cried with was your you recounting the story about the tire. Because the same thing has happened to me, and I have cursed the bike, carried it on my back, looking in Donegal for a cycle shop, and somebody could actually help me change
Yeah, I still haven't managed to get that tire back on. I don't know what it's made
it.
of. So yeah, I'm gonna have an argo hopefully this weekend and see. But yeah, that was funny, because that was on the first day, and I thought, this isn't great. This is a bit of a showstopper here if I can't get this sorted out. So, but again, it helps you think on your feet. What am I gonna do here? There is options. And actually, whenever I got going again, it was after 5 o'clock, and it's still 70 miles ago, and I knew the light was gonna run out. And I knew I'd brought lights, but there were lights more for people to see me, not for me to see where I was going. So, and then navigating down around forest paths and everything else, it was quite an interesting night. But again, it comes down to mindset, because although that wasn't exactly the plan, it was, like I said, right, I'm going to get there late, but as long as I keep moving forward, I will get there. And that's kind of the mentality that you have to put yourself in when you're doing some of the bigger endurance tests. It's almost like, what can I do now that in 1 hour's time I'm going to be in a better place than I am now? And just break it down into small segments like that. So you're not looking at the end, but it's what can I do which is going to put me in a better place.
So can you sort of speak to, I guess, when this plan came to fruition, how many months out, and then how you sort of prepared for the actual trip? And then I actually really want to hear from you a day by day sort of recap of the bike ride, and then when you
Yeah,
got to
to be
Berlin.
honest, I thought about doing the cycle probably in the summertime, and I started to plan that. And then once I kind of got that idea, it was only really mid-August that I decided I was going to run a marathon in the back of it. So, I always run. I wasn't necessarily training for a marathon, but I knew I could get around a marathon.
So mid-August, 1 month before Berlin starts, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. Knock a few long runs out on the Sunday, and but the weekends were mainly spent on the bike, so it was probably about 5 or 6 weeks, because I knew that the distances were going to be 100 plus miles a day, with 2 big days to start off to get through England. So it was really putting in 100 plus miles on the bike at the weekend, down around the moors, up north coast, up around that direction. And just And I've probably done more on the bike this year than I have done in a few previous years. So again, the bike fitness kind of comes relatively quickly, the endurance fitness for it. Again, a lot of it on the bike's managing yourself, managing the nutritional element, making sure you're feeding yourself properly, and getting the fluids in on the bike, and just being comfortable on your position on the bike, which just comes with a bit of time in the saddle, and maybe a few tweaks here and there. But the other big aspect of this here is, how the hell am I going to carry all my stuff on a bike? And I did have offers for people that, Neil, I'll carry your trainers over to you. To me, that would have felt like cheating. I wanted to carry everything, so I carried everything, all the gear that I needed for just living on the road for a week, and then Obviously, my running kit, and had some nutritional supplies in there as well, and you know, some you know, personal products like cream to rub in your ass every day, just for any saddle sores and you know, important things like that. So, but I've kind of done this sort of stuff before, so a bit of a good system with bike packing bags and you know, how to pack stuff in as small a bundle as you can, and yeah, just working all that out. So that planning aspect of it to make sure that all works takes a wee bit of time, and then logistics of boats and everything else. But the training aspect, yeah, I mean, there's probably good 5-6 weeks in the bike, and then the running was just supplemented with what I've done before and working on the fact that I ran Manchester and Belfast Marathon. I knew that, didn't know what condition it was going to be in. I was fairly confident finishing the marathon. And I thought, well, if I can do this in under 3 hours, I'll be happy. You know, 2:59 would be great. Yeah, so managed to do a bit better than that. But again, I was in the only one. I didn't know how it was going to go.
So when you left Belfast, did you literally just walk out your front door with your bike packed and you just cycled up to the ferry? Is that how that happened?
Yeah. No, that's always the most daunting of any of these here trips. That day, you leave your front door and you lock the door, and away you go, and you hope you've got everything, you haven't forgotten something, you know, that's, and yeah, off to the boats.
Ferry over to mainland GB.
Ferry over to Liverpool, yeah, Birkenhead, yeah. Just overnight ferry. It was a wee bit late. And then I cycled to, and I thought, well, it was actually a friend of mine. He says, well, why you get a wee park run in if you're there on a Saturday morning? They will manage this here. So, I planned to get to a park run, Delamere Park Run, which is about 30 miles off the boat, but the boat was an hour late. So I managed to get to Ellesmere Port and just arrive in time, just changed my shoes and joined in and kind of jogged around and jumped back on the bike again and away I went. So yeah, that was a nice way to start. And so my idyllic cycling that through Cheshire countryside and lovely canal paths and cottages and through forests, and yeah, no, it was beautiful. A lot of these, obviously, you have to plan a route, and you've never been there before. You don't want to be, you know, on the main roads on carriageways, so you do a wee bit of planning. There's lots of good tools out there nowadays to do it. I would use Ride the GPS, which is great. You can plot your route, and you can refine it a wee bit. You can get Google Maps Street View images of where you are, so you have a good idea. But it does tend to route you down. Maybe not the fastest, but probably cycle routes, canal paths. Some of it wasn't ideal, but, you know, it was certainly, actually the entire journey, even through England, was pretty safe. I was very rarely on a main road. It was all very small, minor roads, cycle paths, and actually some very idyllic towns. You only think there's only half a dozen of these here in the entire country, but loads of villages, you know, just had the church, the one pub. The one thing they didn't have was a shop. It's kind of gasping for something to eat sometimes and just trying to find like a wee local shop to get into.
Yeah, that dinner on the first night looked pretty desperate. Just a trail mix with a bit of
porridge or something? Yeah, porridge mixed in there. Yeah, I was kind of behind schedule, I think, until yesterday, 10 o'clock. And I actually looked at the phone, and Asda was meant to be up to 11. I thought, right, and the lady at the hotel says, no, the Asda up the road. So I walked up there, and obviously the buggers had closed early. And I went, oh, I can't be bothered cycling into Leicester now here. So what have I got in the bag? And just had that. And then knew I had to get up early the next day. So, just stopped actually at the first shop I found that was open that morning, and had a gourmet breakfast of a ham bagel or something. And yeah, just munched my way along as a road.
And then stage two that next day, 151 miles on Strava, 10 hours 22 of riding, and you basically cycled the other half of England to get on the boat to Holland. Was that a pretty uneventful day, or?
It was bloody hilly. The first 40 miles were constantly up and down hills. Again, when you're planning the route, you get a vague indication of what the terrain's going to be like, but until you're actually on it, you don't really know. And it was pretty hilly, but the main thing was it was into the wind the entire day. And I kind of broke it down into stages, and I was at about 80 miles to get to Cambridge. I left early in the morning, plan was just to, you know, keep cycling, keep it steady, but the wind was hard. There was this... They're just long, I don't know if he's familiar, but like St. Ives to Cambridge, they're just like a cycle route on a like this guided bus. I know how it works. It kind of runs down a concrete channel. Don't know whether the driver has to steer or what he does, but it was slightly uphill and straight line, straight into the wind. And it was tough going, and you saw like people coming the other way flying past you like 30 mile an hour, like 10 mile an hour the other way. So that was a bit soul destroying. But I got to Cambridge and I thought, right, well that's the first part of the journey, you know, break it down, and then the next part. It's just, and again, it comes down to just keeping your mind in the right place. And I was navigating using my Garmin, just sort of following a route that I'd pre-planned into it, but the main thing was, don't look at the distance, just leave it on the map screen and just keep paddling, you know, and just play for time. Okay, where am I going to be in 2 hours time? I have a rough estimate, I've covered another X amount of distance. And yeah, and then once you sort of get closer and you start to see signs for the port, you know, that perks you up a bit. And yeah.
And were you visualizing a pint on the boat, or did that come into it at all?
Yeah, no, I was visualizing, yeah, just chilling out in the boat, because boats are quite relaxing.
Yeah,
you know, any time, you know, if you were in an airport, that's hard work. But getting on a boat's just nice, relaxed, chilled out. You have restaurants, you have bars and everything else. You can walk about. And the best thing about that boat was there was about half a dozen other cyclists as well getting onto the boats, you know. And we were allowed to, in Belfast, the Birkenhead, they took the bike off you and put on a wee trailer. And I was kind of worried. I thought to myself, if this guy forgets to put the bike on the boat and I get off in Birkenhead and there's a new bike, that's a problem. So luckily this time you just rode your bike onto the car deck and just chained it up there. And you're just treated like a car passenger. And then, yeah, off on the boat and, yeah, go and find the restaurant and the bar and sit down and chill out for a while. So, yeah, I know there's something special I always find about then the other side is rolling off on your bike. It's you and your bike and a whole continent then to go and explore. You know, there's one guy, he had got on his bike. He was cycling off to Interlaken to meet his mate. There was a couple, an older couple, and they were just going on a cycle tour and made a conference to go to in Brussels. So we may as well cycle to it. And yeah, just a few other people as well. Just, you know, just off on an adventure around Europe. So yeah, no, it's definitely a great way to travel.
It was probably hard to explain what you were doing, but yeah, I'm sure that was probably one of the more epic adventures that was about to happen on once you departed that boat. You basically went, what, another 5 days after that, cycling through Europe to Berlin?
Yeah, 5 days. This is my taper. So I went down at 100, after the 151 mile day, at 130 miles, 115, and then couple of 100 mile days and a 45 mile day or something like that. So but once I got into Holland, I knew like the terrain's gonna be flat, it's gonna be great, it's gonna be like safe cycle routes all the way. And you know, I pretty much crossed Holland in nearly a day. I just, well, about 30 miles to go to the German border the next day. So yeah, and once again to Germany as well, is predominantly on cycle routes, small roads or roads that had a cycle route down the side of them. So, you know, it was great in that regard for, you know, safe travel and just, yeah, not having to stress too much about traffic and junctions and everything else. It always amazes me though, I sort of think to myself, if a Dutch person came to Belfast and go on a bike, it must be an absolute shock to the system. It must be terrifying for them. So
yeah,
The European infrastructure for bikes is amazing.
Yeah, it was incredible. Like, you know, I wasn't so aware of Germany and it's what it was going to be like, but it was fantastic. You know, you couldn't have asked for any better. And with all these things, then you start these here in your mind's eye, you think you plan them and the sun's splitting the sky and it's glorious. And I was very lucky. The weather was pretty good. Only one soaking and one actually real cracking day. So yeah, that really does make a big difference when you're dry and relatively warm.
As you got closer to Berlin, did you start to think more about the marathon, or do you just sort of mainly focus on getting there?
I was pretty mainly focused on getting there because it was visually every day was, you know, slightly different and there was slightly something else to see or do. So yeah, not to be, you know, talk light of it, I've done the Berlin marathon before, so it wasn't like a big wow factor going to Berlin to run the marathon. Otherwise, it probably would have been a bit more, I suppose, thinking about it and maybe a bit more apprehensive about it. But I did start to I wouldn't say I started to soft pedal, but I started to manage myself more on the road as to make sure that I did get there in some sort of shape and the quads weren't been completely destroyed by the time I made it there. But yeah, so yeah, the focus did shift as the days did go on to more, okay, how am I going to get off the bike here and run? Because, you know, getting off the bike and walking in the evenings was sometimes a bit wobbly. So I was thinking to myself, how am I going to do it and actually run? Again, you just adapt a wee bit. You know, you change what you do. You spend a bit more time, you know, trying to walk in the evening times to get the legs going again and just manage your and manage the nutrition as well, which generally was junk food for the entire week because it's quick, it's easy, you're by yourself, you don't want to be sitting anywhere too long, it's cheap, keep yourself within budgets, and yeah, or just go into supermarkets and fill your face with bread rolls and pan of chocolates and whatever you can find. It's one thing, you spend that much time on a bike, there's no way you're putting weight on. Didn't weigh myself, but I definitely lost weight in that week. So yeah, it was good fun.
This might be a new weight loss fad. People just cycling for 7 days to go run a marathon. You might take off.
Yeah. I think it takes a special individual, shall we say, for that there sort of one. But it's definitely the way forward if you want a rapid weight loss plan.
Yeah. So talk me through it. You get to Berlin. You have a day in between when you arrive and
I arrived on the Friday, which was quite good. Checked into where I was going, gave me the opportunity to get to the expo. I always find these major marathon expos an absolute fascination because it's like Christmas. It's like the Christmas sales or whatever, the mass consumerism of people rifling through racks to get the Berlin shorts or the London shorts or wherever you are, trying them on, like stuff everywhere. I'm just there to pick up my number and get the hell out as quick as I can, but I've done them before, so... But yeah, they're a fascinating place to be. I picked up the number back at the hotel, met up with other people running the marathon as well. We went out for dinner and then I went out for a wee run with a few of them on the Saturday morning. And my next plan was I had a flight booked home for the Monday on Ryanair. I thought, right, I need to get my bike home. So I thought this would be dead easy. I'll just knock in the first bike shop in Berlin. They'll have a cardboard box suitably sized and I can take my bike apart, throw it in and take it home. But I think about five bike shops later, everybody said, no, don't have any of that. And they ended up, but it was a Trek, who's a big bicycle manufacturer. They had a big dealership. It was near Potsdamer Platz, I think it was. And they gave me a cardboard box, but it was massive. You could literally fit the entire bike in without even taking it apart. It's huge. And I wrestled that back to the hotel room and looked at it and I thought, I have a bit of work to do here to chop this down to size. So yeah, went out onto the town and bought a couple of reels of brown packaging tape and then got my wee first aid scissors out and started to cut that box down to size. So I was actually very proud of my work. I've actually still got the box because it's a great box for future use.
And Neil, did I get this right? Ryanair, your bike went back via Ryanair?
It did, yeah. You always have to pay extra for it, but they did manage to get it back.
It expensive?
I think it was about 60 euros, was it?
That's pretty good for Ryanair. I thought they might have charged you thousands knowing them.
Yeah, and it was no hassles at all at the airport. I mean, they didn't even weigh the thing. It fitted onto the outside baggage carousel with about a centimeter to spare. So, yeah, my box geometry was absolutely spot on. So I arrived in one piece again, and we'll put it back together again, absolutely no hassle. So yeah, but again, you know, I've traveled about with bikes numerous times, so pretty experienced in what to do and how to get them apart and get them into the box and get them transit so they're not going to be in bits by the time they come out the other side. But I did have this romantic notion that I'd put the bike back together again in Dublin Airport and cycle back to Belfast. Yeah, that's not happening.
So, Neil, you've just traveled 7 or 8 days. You've eaten nothing but McDonald's, drunk fizzy drinks. You've put almost 800 miles on the legs on the bike. Your butt cheeks are raw and chafed, and now you've got to run 26.2 miles. How did it feel standing on the start line that day?
It actually felt not too bad. And again, it comes down to the fact that, you know, sometimes sometimes it doesn't matter how you feel, you'll fool yourself in the feeling, yeah, no, I feel all right here, this will be fine. And so that was really the mindset of, I've had a day's rest, you know, I'm good to go here, I'll be all right. I've actually done a wee bit of stretching, not much, because I never really do, but you know, you put yourself in that place and you're going to be okay. And start was actually a bit chaotic for Berlin, just actually getting into the start pen. But near the end,
they wouldn't let the bike in there, or
no, surprisingly not. Yeah, yeah, I was a bit miffed by that one. I got there and I met actually one of my clubmates, Tim Brownlee. He was in Berlin as well, and he was starting just behind me, and we spied each other at the start, and we kind of hatched a plan the night before. Well, he knew what time he was going to go for, and I said, well, sure, I'll try and aim for something similar, and we'll try and run together. So the gun went and ran, started running. Just the plan was just to kind of take it relatively easy and at the start and just see how I felt. And Tim, who was starting just in the wave behind, and so he caught up, and yeah, we just ran together and sort of chatted for the first lot of miles and just watched the world go by. And legs felt strange, like, and it sort of ebbed and flowed a wee bit, and it wasn't quite, you know, where I wanted to be, but obviously because of what had gone before. But again, it was something to be enjoyed, because there's no expectation and time being for it. It was just get round. And I know whenever if I'm running at a marathon pace and I'm trying to run well at, I kind of know my heart rate will sit around 155, probably creep up to 160. But I knew this year I was sitting at 145. So cardiovascularly, I knew I was within myself, but I knew my legs were tired and the energy levels weren't quite there. But I managed to get going. And since the marathon went on, those first 10 miles, I said, I'm getting into this here. I feel all right. And things, this could be something special could happen here, as you sort of trick yourself into it. I thought, well, if I can just run at this pace up to 20 miles, then, you know, we'll see where we are with the last 10K to go. And that worked fine up to about 15 or 16 miles. Then I did start to feel it. And maybe by the 20 miles, still moving pretty well, and the pace was consistent, but I wasn't going to be sprinting off in tempo in the last 6 miles, that's for sure. It was more of, as with any marathon, just those last number of miles, it's just, yeah, let's just get to the finish here, and you know, then we can start to enjoy it. It's time's not relevant, but I crossed the line, was it 2:43:20, I think, which was way beyond anything I expected. You know, had I ran 2:59, I'd have been happy. So 2:43, I was pleased with that. Actually, one of the most pleasing things of that run was Tim crossed the line 6 seconds behind me. I turned around and there he was. So that was great. It was great to have you know, somebody at the end as well. So that was fantastic and great, because he had ran a PB. It was a great experience. It was a great day. The weather was fantastic. And once across the line and the kind of, you know, at that point, you know, the objective is complete. The cycle to Berlin, and I've ran the marathon and I've done all right. It's a good feeling, as you do when you finish any marathon. There is that, I think, you know, when people run a marathon, there's an element of suffering that goes on. But once you cross the line, and again, I'll take us back to the reasons for doing it. It's not like having a condition that you can't recover from. You cross the line and the pain ends, the pain stops, that's it. And then that's the, you know, when the endorphins kick in and the euphoria kicks in that you've done it. So and at the end of any marathon like that, there is always a lot of camaraderie with people, you know, you don't know as well. You know, maybe you're ramming them for the last couple of miles, maybe the last 100 meters, but you know, it's always good at the end. And then again, to have somebody there, and we didn't take as long to find the beer tent, so it was great. Good day all around afterwards.
That's truly, truly inspirational. Like, just what a huge, you know, just a huge adventure in itself. And then the fact that you're able to run the marathon so quick in a time that I guess a lot of people would only dream to do is just phenomenal. So yeah, congratulations on the whole thing, and you know, did it for such a great cause as well. Be interesting to see what you get up to next year as your big adventure.
Well, yeah, I suppose you have to, once you've done something, you have to, you know, I mean, this all started off, these cycling adventures kind of came about during lockdown, and then they kind of, last year I went to Boston, it's kind of all been centered around the Marathon Majors, went to Boston, I thought, while I'm in Boston, I may as well do something else, and then discovered there was a cycle route I could get on, and I kind of modified that a wee bit and cycled from Boston to New York, and that was good fun, and then this year it was cycle to Berlin. Now the big news for next year is I've got a place in Tokyo, which is on the 3rd of March, so it's a bit too far to cycle to.
But I'll have to
try and build something around that and see what I can do. All I know at the minute is I have a one-way ticket to Tokyo booked, and after that, that's all up in the air. But I would like to do something while I'm there.
Sounds interesting. You could run up and down Mount Fuji.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, there's a few options being explored, Michael, so you never know. But that'll be great because that'll be the last marathon major ticked off. So that'll be all six done.
And of all those majors, what's your favourite? What's the best course?
The best course, I would say, probably Berlin. Chicago looked like a good course, but due to travel disruption, didn't really get there until like 9 o'clock on the day before, and it all ended up in a bit of a blur. I enjoyed London because of the crowds in London. I don't necessarily enjoy the course as much. I don't really like the second half of London. Boston was hard. Now Boston was hard, but
yeah, Boston always strikes me as iconic because is it Heartbreak Hill, isn't it? Sort of
it's all the hills before it that just.
Yeah.
It's that first 6 miles is downhill. And I knew I wasn't in great shape going into it anyway, just because it was after COVID and everything else. And it just tears the quads out of you, just going all them constant up and down. So it's a tough course, and it can also be very weather affected because it's point to point. So you bust 26 miles out and you run back again. Would I want to do Boston again? Probably not. it is tough, and maybe to do it to enjoy it, not maybe to race it. New York, I enjoy New York again. It's a tough course with the hills and over the bridges all the time, but again, it's great support. It's New York. You've got the, you know, you come into Central Park, you have the skyline, you know, you've everything there that, you know, New York has to offer. So it's a good one, and very interested to see what Japan brings. I mean, obviously the running heritage in Japan's incredible. The volume of runners they have that can, you know, run, I don't know, probably 210, 215 marathons, like there's hundreds upon hundreds of them. It's gonna be quite something. And then just the whole culture as well. I mean, part of this here is to see parts of the world that, you know, use it as a bit of tourism that you're not gonna see. And then when I started this here, my whole objective was to run all six of them in under 2 hours 40, which hasn't happened because Chicago, it was 2:47, jet lag, flight got delayed, flight got cancelled, arrived like the night before the marathon, and I just wanted to go to sleep in the last 10K of it. So that went a bit wrong. Boston went wrong. It was 2:46, I think. So my plan is I have to run an average now. I've changed the goalposts. I have to run an average under 2:40. So I'm going to run Japan about 2:37, and then I'll get my average down. So that's the objective.
It's a very cool undertaking. I wasn't aware that you were sort of ticking off the big six, as it were, which is a nice way to do it.
Yeah. So, to be honest, I mean, the big six, there's probably, although they are, you know, whatever way these are measured and how to work it out, why these are the big six. There's probably better marathons to do out there, you know, less kind of congested, less
Belfast
less
of a circus
to get them. Yeah, no, Belfast is great. I have to say, the best experience around Belfast this year, just as a bit of fun, and it was brilliant, and the crowds were fantastic. The course, it is what it is. It's quite enjoyable course. Although you've got that hill up around West Belfast as you come up around before you get into the waterworks, which is pretty tough going. But
yeah,
it all adds to the Well, as the event and the challenge of it, and I think this year, because they covered it on the BBC iPlayer and BBC Red Button, and it just enhanced it again further. So no, and again, it's nice to run around your home city because you know lots of people. The distance doesn't matter really because you know where you're going. You know, the start is, you know where the finish is. You know pretty much every road in between. So you know it's more something to be enjoyed than anything else. But yeah, I mean, there's other ones. I know people go and do Valencia, and you've got Seville and Frankfurt and all these other marathons that are out there. But again, it depends. It depends what your objective is, really, and what you want to try and achieve out of it.
You don't fancy the Comrades Marathon in South Africa?
I would actually, yeah. Yeah, no, I'd be interested in that. It'd be a good one to do, and I think I like the tradition behind it all, the no nonsense. The barrier comes across if you're not going to meet that time, and that's it, and the heartbreak. Seeing people there, the way they divvy the medals out, you know, it's very sort of old school like that. So yeah, it would be a great one to do.
Any other bucket list races that you want to do?
There's probably a few. A couple of Everest trail race would be interesting. Again, it's to try and pit yourself against different conditions you never faced before. And I did run in the Atacama Desert, and I was at 3,000 meters altitude in the heat. And I've ran in the cold in Greenland, at the Polar Circle. So again, you know, that takes in altitude and mountains. And so as much as it's great running for a time, it's also good to try and pit yourself against other elements, other conditions, be it hot, be it cold, be it altitude, and just to test yourself physically to see, you know, again, it's an exercise and find out where the limit is, you know, where the failure point is. And I'm quite well aware that I'll go off and I'll try something and it'll fail, hopefully not too tragically, but you know, and you have to be prepared for that as well. You know, what is the you know, the acceptable level of whatever you say, you know, enough's enough here.
It's interesting to find out what you're made of and what your breaking point is. I was wanting to ask, is there anyone out there that inspires you, like an athlete or anyone that you've sort of tried to model some of your endurance pursuits off?
Some of them are. There's probably some great books out there, and a lot of them are about people who have just left their front door one day and come back years later, having traveled around the world, either walked around it or cycled around it or cycled part of it, then walked part of it and canoed part of it. And there is some great great stories out there. There's a couple of great books. There's a guy, Charlie Walker, and you know, he cycled halfway around the world, then he walked the Gobi Desert, done all sorts of things, canoed up the Congo, and there's a whole multitude of books out there of similar. They're like almost like travel journals, if you like, but it's all about dealing with, you know, the hardship on the road. And the one thing that's quite interesting all the books touch on is it's the loneliness of where as well of being on the road for that length of time, and how they cope with all that, and you know, and how they manage it all. So yeah, I know they're quite inspirational in how they manage to do it, and you know, face all the hardship that comes along with it and manage to get through. So yeah, specifically athletes out there. I mean, there's quite a few in the marathon at the minute. Some quite incredible times. I don't know how skeptical I am. Is it all super shoes, or is there a wee bit of something else going on? Is super shoes a good masking agent for a few things? But you know, maybe if you go back a number of years to the likes of some of the, you know, the generation. I always go back when people say about running marathons and everything else, and you run a marathon and that, but then, you know, if you look back to what people were running marathons in, say like the 1980s, when people were running 220 odd marathons, and that was what you did because that was normal. Now it's abnormal, not abnormal, but it's considered exceptional. And again, you know, human physiology hasn't changed. It's just the way we live has changed, and maybe we're not as tough as we used to be. You know, we don't, as a training group, there's probably a lot more clubs, but not the same quality there, not the same groups training hard together. And, you know, back in the day, you went home, there was three TV channels and, you know, the football wasn't on every night. So what else would you do but go out and run? So yeah, I always bring it back to that when people say, you know, you're doing all this here, but say, well, I know it's okay, but you always have to think, it's just human nature to think this generation is the best that there's ever been, but you know, you have to look at a bit of history and see what's gone before. But I think that there is certainly good standard there now within the running community. A lot of guys running good times, and hopefully we'll see it the Sealy. I think last year was exceptional for the times that we ran, and we'll see this year what comes along.
Yeah, it'd be really interesting. And yeah, I've actually noted in the past couple of months that I've been getting to know you whilst we were training for Dublin Marathon. You're a bit of a silent assassin. You know, you seem quite quiet and reserved, but then, you know, I'll say to you something like, oh, that last rep was pretty hard. And then you'll say back, oh, it's not hard until you're bent over puking your guts up or something like that. So it just catches me off guard every time. But yeah, look, love your mantra, and looking forward to what you run in Sealy and any big adventures next year. I'll see if I can hang on to the back of you at Sealy, but no promises. Might be in front of you. You never know.
You never know. You never know.
Good stuff. Well, look, Neil, thank you so much for, you know, joining us. And yeah, really appreciate you coming on. I don't know if you had anything else, Michael.
No, I've known Neil for a while. And I think the first time I got to know Neil, he was actually at one point, he was one of the top Masters runners over here. It's a few years ago. Unfortunately, during his era, he had Mark McKinstry, who was an absolute beast. But Neil, you finished, yeah, I think, runner up 1 year in the Masters cross country in absolutely horrific conditions at Billy Neil.
It was Billy Neil, yeah. It's sort of like
proper cross country.
There's probably two races in my life that you kind of think, I should have won that, and that's one of them. And then the other one was in the Atacama Desert. I should have won that. But you know, if you have to put yourself out there and be up there to have that opportunity. So they're the two that you think, damn.
Well, I'll be at the Sealy as well, and I'll be interested to see how this all unfolds, because there's a couple of digging matches within the Striders group at the minute, which are getting quite tasty, and a few guys have talked themselves up, so it'll be interesting to see how it all shapes up.
Oh yeah, the psychology of the start line of race is, you know, it always fascinates me, and you know, the different personalities and what comes out on the start line on the race day. You know, it's a fascinating place to be, which all adds to the mystique of the sport.
And I think your old mucker, Simon Murray, is making a comeback run.
Yeah, no, I've been speaking to Simon, so yeah, you know, he's been doing a bit of training, and yeah, we'll see how that works out for him now.
Absolutely. Okay, cheers, Neil.
All right, Neil, thank you. See you later.